Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. The best. Well, are we the best? Are we the best at anything? A podcast. How about that?
I think we're very listenable.
One of the most listenable podcasts
Yeah, there you go.
in the micro niche of discussing sports, college football, Texas, college sports, in general, guys BSing about nonsense. Is that fair?
I think so. I think you
All
nailed
right.
it.
All
Yeah,
right.
I
There
think
you
it's good.
go. All right. Well, we're going to try to improve our listenability by talking a little bit about everything. So, Texas Longhorns.
That's a new approach.
Yeah, exactly. Usually we're very disciplined. The Texas Longhorns had a pretty badass weekend. So, you want to take a little victory lap with me, Randy? And talk about 11 draft picks for the Longhorns. So five of the first 52. So this wasn't a bunch of dudes coming in the sixth round. We got Keelan Robinson drafted, bro. Jordan Whittington. Like,
And
what's
it was,
up?
man, it was awesome. It was really good. I was very happy to see it. Little upset that my prediction did not come full circle there with the three in the first round. But shame on all those people that were sabotaging a good young man, according to Mr. Ballard. But that was awesome, man. You got 11. It's cool. I mean, it's just great sitting around, enjoying a weekend and seeing another fellow Longhorn pop up on a podcast or a Twitter feed or whatever. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was. Interesting thing about this draft. Did you notice how the rankings of college football finished and the number of NFL players drafted by program matched up to that?
It seemed to be pretty familiar to a different ranking system. I can't place it in my head right now, though.
Yeah, so Michigan won the national title and they had the most drafted. And then Texas, Washington, and Alabama were next in total draft choices, and they were the other teams in the playoff. And then the runners up were the teams that didn't make the playoff, just missed the cusp of it: Florida State, Georgia, Oregon. And that
Well,
was your top seven.
Florida State was the best team in the nation, Paul. They just,
Florida State was robbed of their moment in the
yeah.
sun.
So
We were.
take them out, but
We were deprived of watching Michigan beat them 34-3 and prepare for their next two opponents rather than actually prep Florida State. So, yeah, the bottom line, if you have a bunch of draftable dudes to the NFL, you usually play pretty good football. And the handful of exceptions to that, there was usually some fatal flaw to that football team. So I think Clemson had seven. And I think we kind of know.
they had no quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the teams that sort of had a bunch of dudes drafted but didn't achieve either had no defense at all. USC. Oh, so you know what? Clemson had six, USC had seven. So USC had plenty of quarterback, plenty of offensive weapons, no defense. And then teams like Clemson that went 9-4, it's a pretty soft schedule. They had no quarterback play. So it seemed like the teams that underachieved, who had five, six, seven guys drafted, the common thread was no defense or no quarterback, because I think that robs you of your floor. Yeah, like if you have a quarterback, you're going to beat bad teams, right?
Absolutely.
If you've got six other draftable dudes. But if you don't have a quarterback, you can have talent, even enough talent to hang with the big boys. But every week, you're kind of vulnerable if you play a team with a pulse, right?
Does Clemson have no quarterback or a bad scheme, in your opinion?
I don't know. You know, it's an interesting question. I think their scheme's not great. And there's some sense that they're too simple.
It's very simple.
Yeah. But I've seen simple win in college football, and it kind of unleashes guys. I just don't think Cade Klubnik was very comfortable in the offense. And I don't maybe it's because he's not good. But I know there were plenty of people that said that was the guy we should have taken instead of Ewers. And so far, I think Ewers has certainly had the better college career.
They're wrong. Those people are wrong. It's no debate at this point. But there is a debate about what's wrong with Clemson. I think it's very, 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 very rudimentary offense. And you got to have guys that out-guy the other guy. And they don't have him anymore.
Well, when you had Trevor Lawrence at quarterback and three NFL receivers, you can sort of get away with simplicity.
Shocker. It works, right?
Yeah. And then you have a fall off there. Here's the good news. Dabo is going to go in the portal and replenish. I tried to keep a straight face. I couldn't pull it off.
Almost. Good for you for holding it together as long as you did.
Yeah, I tried. But yeah, I mean, so the wild thing is the exactitude with which the final finish of the top seven teams in college football exactly matched draftable talent.
Oh, you're right. 100% right.
Pretty wild. And then I wrote an article about this on Inside Texas. The poor freaking Pac-12. They have their greatest league year in like decades in terms of parity, right? Really good teams, like multiple good teams. They have the second most guys drafted. So it wasn't just a mirage. And by the way, they had put together one of the most impressive rosters of coaches of any league, up and comers. Dan Lanning, Jed Fish, whatever you want to say, Lincoln Riley is at least an offensive genius. And, obviously Kyle Whittingham, all these guys. And it all just was for nothing. Like the second best conference just committed suicide because they have stupid admins.
I'm glad you mentioned that at the end. So I'm going to get your take on this.
Sure.
Is it the just ineptitude of being able to manage the TV deal aspect of it? Or it's not an unwillingness to spend, because they pay those guys. They're not paying SEC, but it's a decent amount of money.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree with you. It's an ineptitude at the highest level, but why are they good now? How did they get good and then just die?
This is a story, to put it succinctly, of the a deficit, but also the abundance of leadership at one level and a deficit of leadership at another. So when they had Chris Peterson at Washington, he was one of the shrewdest evaluators of talent you could find. And he had our kind of guy, the OKG culture. Kalen DeBoer, X's and O's whiz, takes over for him with basically a stocked pantry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then he is a real good chef. So Washington developed the hell out of that football team. They had 10 dudes drafted. That's amazing. For what, where Washington was ranking in terms of recruiting classes. And by the way, they'll be lucky to have two guys drafted next year. So that's happening. You've got Oregon hires Dan Lanning, great hire. And They've got a real football culture. USC goes and pays for Lincoln Riley. That's a huge coup to go get that from a peer, right? That just doesn't really happen in college football. You don't have the head coach at Texas go coach LSU or vice versa. So that's a big deal. And then you have these like, hey, let's take a shot on this guy. And all of them panned out. Jed Fish panned out. The guy Jonathan Smith at Oregon State panned out. Like every single one of these, I mean, Whittingham back in his day was like, let's try this guy out higher. He pans out. So all of these now, Arizona State, Herm Edwards didn't quite pan out, but I guess no one's perfect. So
hey, it would have they didn't enforce the rules.
That's right. I mean, exactly.
Yeah.
So at the middle level of football, meaning the head coaching level, the Pac had this incredible infusion of talent. And these guys could evaluate and develop football players. So the product of the Pac-12 vastly improved. This is the best draft they'd had in decades.
Absolutely.
Versus 2023 draft, they were up 59%. Okay. And they're, like I said, they finished second overall. They beat the Big Ten in draft, and they finished second to the SEC. So that's going on, but at the highest levels, there's a complete dearth of leadership. And it's a type of dearth of leadership where it's a bunch of guys with credentials who don't know what they're doing, who don't actually understand it. Like, I understand it better than all of them, and I'm not saying that as a compliment to myself. I'm saying I'm a functional moron, and I understand how this all works and the interplay of it all, and they didn't. And it was sort of... So early on, Larry Scott was effectively just wrong. He made the wrong bet on how TV was going to evolve. Some yep. Silicon Valley nitwits got in his head and said, no, this is not going to be networks. This is that whole structure is gone. You know, we're disrupting that. This is all going to be, you know, on YouTube. This is all going to be private channels that you're going to have to pay for. You know, everything's going to be pay-per-view for college football or whatever, right? Or you know, Hulu's going to buy your rights. Well, this was all being touted to him before the Pac-12 product had actually improved. So here's the thing people say on the West Coast, there's no culture of football. Well, USC has a culture of football. It's front-runnering, but there is a culture there, okay? Oregon and Washington have a legit, no bullshit culture of football. Those people yep. are very passionate. They get fired up. You go play at Outson, you go play in Washington Husky Stadium, you will realize that there is a home field advantage. Arizona State, they're front runners. If the football's good, they have massive student bodies and they'll get out there and watch them. If the football's bad, they go tan and go to frat parties, right? Utah, legitimate football culture. Utah has a terrific home field advantage. So
absolutely.
Is it broadly true that nothing like can compare to the SEC or Texas? Yes, of course. But that's the apogee, right? The truth is, if you had good enough leadership at the coaching level and you improve the football, the fan, if you build it, they will come.
Yep.
But the dearth of leadership at the top, first of all, Larry Scott's folly of getting all these Silicon Valley guys to talk him into not committing their rights, right, to the offers and basically waiting for everything to fall apart and for creative destruction to occur. That's not what was going to happen because the other conferences were not going to consent to it because the Big Ten and the SEC specifically were seeing the value of these incredible deals because traditional networks and traditional media understand that's live sports are the only way to sell advertising anymore. If you're an advertiser putting up commercials during regular network television, you're a buffoon.
You're better off putting up a billboard in between Yoakum and Quero.
Yes, absolutely. I'll read it. There's nothing else to look at. So. So there's that. But then Larry Scott found Jesus late in the process when he realized that he'd miscalculated. So Scott goes to the universities and says, hey, ESPN's offering us $30 million a school We need to take it. I know I filled your head with all this nonsense. I miscalculated. We need to take the $30 million per. We need to build up our product. And we need to revisit this in 5 years, 7 years, whatever. Well, by then, the PAC leadership at the individual school levels were being influenced by academics. One of them specifically, a statistics professor or something at Arizona State, who did a model. Modeling never fails, Randy. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Models are very accurate.
Don't get me on the stat rant.
There's no other areas in our life where modeling... Bad modeling has affected us. I'm not talking about your pitching. So this guy convinced the Cals of the world, the Stanfords of the world, the Arizona States of the world, that their true worth in the market was 50, 55 million per school. Same as the SEC contract, same as the Big Ten. So they said no. And instead of ESPN coming back and paying them their true value, as they were supposed to in the negotiation, ESPN went, okay, cool. Bye.
Good luck with your plane tickets out east.
And then all these nitwits were left staring at each other with their MBAs and their credentials and their amazing degrees. And they realized they didn't understand how any of this worked. And the whole thing imploded. Now, at that stage, were there a couple that were like, it may not be the worst thing in the world if it imploded, because these guys are idiots and we've got greener pastures. But I can assure you, most of the pack wanted to keep the Pac-12 and be their thing. And not just for tradition and consistency, but they're sort of snobbery, right? So that's kind of what happened. So simultaneous to them having the greatest season ever, right? Or in quite a while, I'm exaggerating, and turning out all this talent and all these promising coaches, it was all murdered by administrative manslaughter. I wouldn't say straight up second degree murder, because it wasn't. So first degree murder is premeditation. Second degree murder is I just go hit someone with a bat in the parking lot because I got mad. And then manslaughter is like stupid negligent. Is that about right?
I have no idea. But so where does in the downfall of the financial structure of the Pac-12, does the unexpected fingernail paint overage come?
I mean, you like Caleb Williams fashion choices?
Maybe.
Okay.
Just saying, hypothetically speaking.
Have you ever thrown a touchdown pass with Revlon on your hands?
No, I have not.
Okay, so I think he's clearly more talented than you.
He's definitely more talented than me.
Okay.
But he's also an idiot.
He's making daring choices, Randy.
Sorry, Caleb, if you're listening. Doubt it. But yeah. Wow, gosh. Anyway,
so that is the rise and fall of the Pac-12. And the irony of it all was, even when the football sucked or struggled, they were good at everything else.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, it really was a phase they had to get through. And whether by brilliant insight or pure luck, they stumbled into six or seven really solid coaches that were going to revive and save the league despite their best efforts. I mean, and even Dion, who I don't think anyone will confuse with Vince Lombardi tactically between the lines, that was a hell of a hire for Colorado from just a PR standpoint, fan interest standpoint. I mean, Folsom Field in Boulder has not been sold out in quite some time, and that was a hard ticket last year. So, you know, ultimately, I don't think it works out for Dion, but the point is that they were trying. You know, these different schools started trying.
Absolutely.
And they had some real coaches, and they were turning it around. I mean, the bad teams in the Pac-12 were better than the bad teams in the other leagues. Their middle class, the Oregon States, the Washington States, they're pretty good football teams. I watched them play. They didn't suck. Not in the way that, like, you know, freaking Baylor did in the Big 12 or the bottom of the ACC, you know, Wake Forest. So, yeah, man, that's how it happened. They have their best draft. They have their best football in decades, and it's all for naught.
Boop, gone.
Yeah, I think I wrote that. Imagine, you ever seen The Dark Knight Rises?
Yep.
The last one with Bane. So you know how Bane snaps his back and then condemns him to the prison, that crap hole underground in the darkness? And the only way he can get out is to rehab his back, regain faith, and then jump out, like make the leap of faith to get out of that hole. Imagine that was Pac-12 football. It's Batman broken back at the bottom of this subterranean layer, right? This prison with the degenerates of the world.
And he's ready to jump out. But
no, he jumps out. But he gets out.
There's a steel grate over his head.
No, he jumps out. The steel grate, he breaks through it with his teeth, Randy. That's how determined he is. And the next scene they cut to is an Uber Eats driver vaping, and he runs a red light and hits Bruce Wayne and kills him. That's what happened to the Pac-12.
So he gets through the grate.
He gets through the grate. He got through all the – everything was going to be great, and we're going to take back the city from Bane and the show trials. And we're going to beat his ass at his own game. And the Pac-12 administrators were the Uber driver vaping and missed the red light. And they just kill Bruce Wayne as he's crossing the street.
Oh, man.
That's the next scene.
Paul's trying to tell everybody, do not use Uber Eats.
That's right. That's the whole point of my whole story. So anyway, I oversimplified some aspects of the Pac-12 tale for time purposes. But that's about what happened. No, Scott was fundamentally
right. You're right. 100% right.
He was fundamentally wrong. He did realize late in the game, hey, I'm wrong, take the contract. And by then, the administrators had outside advisors, and the advisors were dumber than they were. And they said, no, that's not our fair value. We're the Pac-12. And ESPN said, we've got the SEC. And we just added Texas and OU, and we don't need any of you. And the whole conference died.
Pop.
Boom. And so now the Big Ten raided all their best assets, the four teams you want, right? ACC somehow to stay relevant. They've got their two teams that matter fighting tooth and nail. Florida State, like literally, like, yeah, we signed a contract, but like, come on, bro, we're leaving. And the ACC is like, well, you have a contract. And the FSU is like, yeah, but you guys suck. So they're not in good shape. The Big 12, hey, highly competitive now. I won't put that against them. But you know who else is highly competitive? The MAC. So will I watch a Big 12 game on a Thursday if I'm otherwise bored? Sure.
Absolutely. I'll watch them all.
Yeah.
No.
But they're not relevant.
No, it's going to be background noise on a Thursday while I'm trying to get my kids to sleep.
Yeah. And so I did another post where I took the new realigned leagues and imagined if that had been the draft, right? You count those leagues by what happened. SEC's number one in volume. And then I did it per capita as well. So you could look at quantity and quality, meaning, you know, there's 18 Big Ten schools now, right? So you got to compare apples to apples. So yes, if you do that, the SEC and the Big Ten, the gap massively widens. And the new Big 12 would have put out 1.6 draftees per team. The SEC would put out 4.5. So
that actually seems low.
I mean, I get it. But
yes, but in terms of perception, it seems low.
So think about it this way. I'm going to give you an SEC team that's on the upper tier. So let's double that number, 9, okay? Which the SEC multiple teams achieved in that draft. And then we'll double the Big 12 number, 3. When a team with 9 NFL dudes out of their starting 22 plays 3 out of 22, what's going to happen 90% of the time?
I'd go to 95, but yes.
Yeah. Now in baseball, that team would
different.
Win.
It's different. Yeah, it's different
would win 60% or whatever, right? They'd win the series 2-1.
Yeah, there's a dude on top of a hill out there that influences things much more than in the old football contest.
Yep. So anyway, that's the lay of the land. And so, but people are talking about Power Four. I mean, I guess that's fine, but it doesn't mean what they think it means. 100%. There's an elite two. There's the other two. And then there's G5. And I think over time, the other two will be closer to G5 than the elite two.
You're saying you think they go backwards?
I think the best G5 team will be more like the best Big 12 team than the best SEC team.
I agree. In terms of
disparity of talent.
No, I think you're going to have two haves, and then the have-nots will all mold together.
Well, and so then also factor in, and Ian and I have talked about this, the portal is only going one direction.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
So, like, it used to be a big deal that the 2001 Miami Hurricanes had 12 or 13 dudes drafted. That was a big deal back then. That's normal now.
It's going to be more and more and more and more and more common.
Absolutely. It could accelerate, right? And then consider the flow of the portal, right? It goes G5 up. It doesn't go down. Within this decade, if you want to even go outside of this construct of G5 and P4 and all that stuff, the FCS, South Dakota State, those dudes, right? That league. They had 20 dudes drafted one year. That whole conference. I mean, not the conference, the whole league. The whole designation, whatever you want to call it. That will never happen again, Randy.
I'm going to push back on that. I would say that guys that land at that level may end up staying at that level more so than your group of five people.
If they show out as a junior, I think they're going to, I think it's going to be like an NFL team looking for free agents. They're going to say, hey, we don't know how good you are. You're at South Dakota State. Fly here. Meet us at 10 a.m. Wear your cleats. We're going to time you and we're going to have you run some drills and you could leave with a scholarship and an NIL check. I think it's going to come to that, but I get what you're saying that maybe teams will be less likely to take a risk because of the gap in football. But I think that you're going to have,
I think those guys in general are kind of freakish athletes that people are like, hey, put a marker on that guy. I want to watch him in 3 years.
Yeah.
And then if their measurables are where they typically like to see that type of person, maybe they fly through. But I see your point to where, no, you're going to have to level up, so to speak, in order to get on the radar.
A lot of FCS guys are dudes who are completely overlooked, academically ineligible, maybe as a high school senior. They're in Memphis, right? Mm-hmm. They've never had a shot. Then they go to FCS and ball out. Or it's a guy who was 6'4", 185 pounds as a high school senior, played wide receiver, punter, and safety, and ran track and was a good basketball player. And then he went to college and he's 6'4", 245. By his sophomore year, and suddenly he's a different human being playing tight end. So I don't know. It's the Jay Novacek type dudes. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't think so. Back in 2019, what was equivalent to G5, because some of the stuff has shifted, we had about 36 guys drafted the NFL total from all of G5. This last draft, it was 18.
Interesting number.
And I think there were about 20 guys that transferred up that got drafted.
I was about to say, what's the number of where they started?
Yeah. So I wasn't able to track all of it, but I was able to find 10 or 11 guys. And I was like satisfied. And I was like, okay, I see what happened here. So,
and like I agree with that.
For TCU. He started out at Louisiana Monroe. And he got drafted. And now they're saying, oh, TCU got him drafted. And it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, TCU got him drafted. We'll take credit for AD Mitchell, right? But we know where the guy started. And 5 years ago, he would have finished out his career at Louisiana Monroe.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. So it's a weird dynamic. I'm not even saying any of this is good. I'm just explaining.
No, it's an interesting observation for sure. But I'd like to see it in the like next, you know, 2 to 3 years and see how it all plays out.
I think it's going to accelerate, not plateau.
I think you're right that the lower level D1 stuff will accelerate. The thing that's interesting to me is, hey, who went to Blinn? Who went to blah 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 Mississippi Community College? Because I know that's a big thing there. And where do they end up and where they go? And is it much different from the past, or do you just notice it more because now we're paying attention?
Yeah. Well, and the you know, I think the G5 to P4 road doesn't require much imagination. What will be interesting is how much is Texas going to raid the Arizonas and Baylors? How much is LSU going to rob from Tulane?
Could be a P4 to P4 deal.
Yeah. Yeah, the bottom two to the top two. So now, I mean, if you're motivated and fired up about football, so Ashton Jeanty, who's the big star running back at Boise State, he had a great year. Everyone was kind of after him. Boise State cares about football, and they've got a few successful alums. Boise's kicking ass as a city, right? Everyone's moving there. And they just said, hey, we can match whatever NIL offer you get. Stay here and you'll still be the man. And Ashton Jeanty was like, cool. Sounds good to me. And he's like tooling around Boise in sports car. So, yeah. I mean, so it's not inevitable that you're going to lose all your best players, but you have you have to fight for them, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a drawback to being the head coach at Boise or North Texas or whatever. Hey, you find a diamond in the rough and I succeeded. I made him good. Oh, crap.
And he's gone. Yeah.
Now I've got to try and keep him. Shit.
That really sucks.
No, it does. It really does. I mean, I hate it for those guys. I mean, it's, but I don't know. You get a paycheck for a reason.
Yeah, true. Yeah, well, if they do go to the employer revenue model, that will change. You're going to have to sign contracts. You're going to have to honor them. So what will be interesting is, are we going to be comfortable fining college kids who sit out camp in protest?
I don't know.
Are we going to be, and I even said the word college kids, which I hate. I didn't mean to do that, but when all this came down, I remember writing a couple of years ago and people were like pushing back on it. But I was like, hey, pretty soon when we start paying these guys, there used to be sort of a, hey, man, these are our guys. I know that guy didn't play well, but that's our guy. Like, don't be putting up threads that say, you know, blah, blah, blah sucks. Once you pay them, and once this becomes pretty mercenary, it's kind of hard to advance that argument. You're basically a pro athlete.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. I mean, that there is an element of that. And I think there's plenty of college guys who are like, oh, you can tell me I suck if I'm making 500 grand and I got a cool car. I'm good with that. And no expenses, by the way, because I got my meal plan. I got my housing provided, et cetera. So, but it is going to be tough for some of them whose frontal lobes have not fully formed, and they're 19 and they go on Twitter after a bad game. And, they've always gotten criticism, but I think it will take a different form.
A lot different than, the way they think it's going to hit. But yeah. Also, I said, hey, more power to him. But I said, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, man. Was there anything else? Did you watch the draft or just sort of had it on in the background? Or
yeah, I saw some things. I'm still trying to figure out what Buffalo was doing.
Why? Now, was this because they were your last best hope of fulfilling your prediction?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I was trying to win a bet. So, yes. Absolutely. But I just don't understand why you would allow the team that you compete with. Hey.
More than compete with.
Here's something that helps you beat us again, and we can't figure out how to beat you. I don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, not just compete with, like, you'd be in a couple of Super Bowls if not for the Chiefs.
No, we can't beat you, but here, let us help you.
But here, take this Xavier Worthy guy who runs a 4-2-1, and let's pair him with Patrick Mahomes and bring the deep ball back to KC.
I don't know. That was weird, and I have no idea what Atlanta was doing. I'm sure everybody's like, oh, wow. Hot take, but let's sign a quarterback to a multi-million-dollar deal and then spend more money in the draft on another one.
So I had a collision of two philosophies that I never thought would collide with that draft pick, which is if you find a quarterback that you absolutely believe will be a superstar, if you truly believe that in all your scouting, you must draft him. But
I'm fine. I was about to say, I'm fine. But with that. I'm fine with that. I'm really.
You just brought Kirk Cousins in for $180 million. So if you love Penix, why did you sign Kirk Cousins? Take that money. The money you dedicated to that one position could get you five badass free agents. And then start Penix because he's 24 years old. Because so here's the deal. Penix may take a little time to adjust because it's the NFL, but the expectation is that Penix is ready to play. There can't be this like, well, and when he's 29, he's going to be ready.
Well, Penix better be ready to play. He's my age.
Yeah, exactly. So my question is, why? Like, it's a weird allocation of resources. So it's either bring in Cousins and then use the draft to build resources around him, or don't bring in Cousins because you just realize Michael Penix is the stellar steal of the draft, and you're going to get him, and you're going to start him, and now you're going to surround him with a bunch of badasses that you sign in free agency.
So the only thing I can think is that they were like not prepared for him to be there when they drafted. But what intel were you basing that on? Like, everything that I saw was like, Penix wasn't even close to there.
Well, so that was the intel on Bo Nix.
Put a pin in that one.
Okay. I would have lost a lot of money if someone had said, hey, Bo Nix is going in the top 15 or wherever he went.
No, we'll come back to that. Yeah.
I would have called you and been like, hey, this idiot wants to bet me $1,000. All right, so back to Penix.
Defend the bowl screen on Knicks. Anyway, I just don't. I don't. I mean, if they had him valued there, that's great. I don't think anybody else did. And man, the guys had like four season-ending injuries of the 6 years he's played college football. Like, I don't know. I mean, I watched him dice up our secondary and multiple other ones over the course of the year. Like, I mean, no doubt what the talent level he has is, but I don't understand why you do both. Like, it just does not make sense to me. It doesn't make sense.
Michael Penix had highlights in college. College highlights that were followed by Justin Herbert college highlights. And Trevor Lawrence college highlights. Like, to give you some sense of where he's sitting in the maturity bubble, right? But again, if you think he's the guy, Okay. Go
He's
get him.
Guy. It's great. Absolutely.
But why did you sign 35-year-old Kirk Cousins? And you now, and to a 4-year contract, $90 million guaranteed. Yeah. It's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
They're like, oh, it's front loaded. I'm like, it's $90 million guaranteed. I don't care how front loaded it is. It could be all $90 million tomorrow. What are you doing?
Front loaded's not good.
No, it's worse. Get out of the deal. Don't. It's 90 minutes.
We're going to cut him in 2027. Don't worry.
Yeah, we're going to cut him in a year. Like, we just expect him to play. I don't know, man. That was a weird deal. It was a weird deal. I don't know.
That was wild. I mean, it was crazy.
Three things that jumped out. It was that, J.J. McCarthy. I don't know what your opinion of him is, but no. As a first-round quarterback. For me, and then the Bo Nix deal. I don't get any of those three. I just don't.
So JJ, I'll try to defend, but I may not be very. My heart might not be in it. But
you have to talk in a Minnesota accent.
Yeah, JJ McCarthy. He has traits.
You're trying real hard.
Right? Well, so look, just because they didn't let JJ cook doesn't mean he wasn't capable of it. And if you look at him from an efficiency standpoint, he was extremely efficient as the quarterback.
I did see that. Third down, he was really good.
And very often they put third and nine on his shoulders and said, make a great throw. And if you watched his highlights, he had some crazy throws where you'd go, whoa, that's legit. He is very mobile. He doesn't have a lot of wear and tear. I guess I'm grasping now.
We didn't get touched. But, yeah.
He doesn't like Michael Penix. You're like, okay, he can naturally throw a football. We have lots of evidence of that, right? I don't know about McCarthy in that regard, but I think he did move up the board kind of universally, which suggests that other GMs liked him too. So I guess that's the best I could say for him. He's also 21. Right.
I mean, he may end up being the best quarterback in the draft. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that I would have risked the capital.
Yeah. I mean, the NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, you're kind of sunk. Right. I mean, that's what we're kind of learning in the game. So I mean, they get overdrafted. I don't think that's surprising. Yeah. They've been getting overdrafted. I mean, Jake Locker got drafted and he was a terrible college quarterback just as a passer. So I guess that's it. And I will say this about both him and Drake May. They're 21. And they're being compared to two 24-year-olds in Penix and Jaden Daniels. And, man, a lot happens between age 21 and 24 for a quarterback. So
very true. Very true.
That could be part of the wager. I don't find that pick, like, crazy objectionable or insane. Bo Nix, talk about a 24-year-old. That was surprising. And it's...
There's where the problem... Yeah. Yeah.
And it's Sean Payton.
So the best defense that I have heard is that Sean Payton loves to run essentially no protection other than your five offensive linemen.
Yeah, that's true.
And apparently he's good at that and getting the ball out quick. A lot of the games I saw was a lot of flat zone throws, which it doesn't matter what your protection is.
So you're saying Bo Nix is the Sean Kemp of the NFL? No protection.
I don't know what that means. Oh, I got you. Sorry, take me a second. Ever since we talked about it in the game that we watched, it's like every throw is 5 yards or less. Everyone. Literally yeah. Everyone. Every single one. And then it comes out that's why Peyton likes him. It's like, okay, I guess.
It's like, hey, Sean, you know, like Sam Hartman could do that probably. I mean, if you didn't get drafted.
I mean, if you want to run an offense that just is predicated on we're not going to assign more than five guys to protection and you have to get the ball out of your hands. All right, that's cool. But I mean, those guys exist outside of the first round.
Also, NFL defensive backs have this thing called instincts, and they'll break on the ball.
You see it a couple times and you're going to figure it out, right?
I just, there's a reason NFL cornerbacks are in the NFL. And if you keep throwing the same route over and over, they'll break on it and it'll go the other direction. So
like Sean Payton's at the point of his career where he's now trying to like prove how smart he is.
I guess. Because I do think he's smart. That's the mystifying thing about this.
And now it's like he's like, oh, watch this. I'm gonna take this guy and do this, and we're just gonna kill it. And I agree that Russell Wilson wasn't a good fit. Somebody signed him. But I don't know, man. I saw too much of that guy in college because he was on TV quite a bit. And I don't doubt that he can be an effective quarterback in some system, but I don't see the first round.
He strikes me as a career backup who has a 12-year
career. I don't see the first round expenditure.
Yeah, well, so here's the wild thing. After he was drafted, there was not another quarterback picked until pick 150.
He broke the system.
Yeah, apparently so. And then Sam Hartman, undrafted. That was interesting.
No slow mesh guys out there, huh?
No. Slow mesh probably doesn't work in the NFL. Probably.
Greatest system ever. Just watch ESPN.
Okay. Well, just saying. But yeah, I just, that was interesting. And the funniest thing about the draft is the more it's different, it's the same. So at the end of the draft, I pull up the Steelers draft picks. And I'm like, I recognize that guy. He's really good. I recognize that guy. He's really good. I recognize that guy's really good. And they got them all somehow in the third and fourth rounds. Roman Wilson, the wide receiver from Michigan.
Absolutely.
Nailed really him. Good. Classic Steelers pick. Gets them after all the receivers have gone that were considered the elite, right? They got these interior linemen that I all knew and recognized. And I was like, that guy's really good. That guy. Such a Steelers draft.
When they took Watts, I was like,
yeah, that's a great pick.
He is a good player. Okay. I thought he was.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Validates you. Yeah.
I feel justified now because I don't think he had the career in college that we thought. But when they picked him, I was like, huh, Tomlin thinks he's good. He's good. He's good.
All right. Well, and talk about how the more things stay the same, sometimes they change and they'll throw a curveball on you, right? Detroit Lions are good at drafting now, Randy. You just have to accept this. Kerryon Arnold was the best corner in the draft. What was the weakness of the Lions?
Their head coach drinks 75 Starbucks coffees a day.
Hey, Dan Campbell's a good coach. I like him.
You're right. He's good.
You should be pulling for Texas Country Boys, even if they're Aggies.
No, I'm a big Campbell fan. I love the dude.
So they went and got the best corner in the draft, Kerryon Arnold, who I think is really good. And then they went and got Rakestraw later, who's kind of a hit or miss guy. Like if he hits, it's a big hit. If it's a miss, they'll just shrug. And their big deficiency last year was their secondary. I thought they addressed their needs. And then the year before, of course, they just murdered the draft. So the Detroit Lions are good at drafting. I don't know. Somewhere Chris Spielman is shaking his head. Like, I would have taken another receiver.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the rest of their organization, really. But I think Campbell's a damn good coach.
Any Dallas Cowboys, their first draft pick was a guy who did horns down on his draft profile photo. That was good.
And his second highlight, he was holding. And
his second third, highlight, he was holding. And third highlight. Jersey.
Third highlight, he was holding. And his fourth highlight, he was holding. But he's from OU, so that's understandable. That's all you have. I don't know enough about the guy. I don't know. I didn't like the pick, but whatever.
Tyler Guyton is who we're talking about.
Yeah. So I don't
know. But, yeah, I've just – the Cowboys are determined to estrange themselves from me. So
I don't. They're I don't know anything about the guys they picked. I tried to ignore them because I'm sort of a fan, but not really. Just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
But nothing's changing anytime soon.
No.
Or maybe it will change soon. But I doubt it.
It's a man who's resolved. Disappointed.
I feel like we got a you can live forever pill in play.
You ripped down your cowboy pennants that you had hanging in your bedroom a couple of years ago, didn't you?
Possibly.
All right.
Or 20 years ago.
So, Texas, beyond the PR hit, I mean, not the hit, but awesome. The PR boost.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. The validation of Sark's system and program of, hey, we're now going, you go to Texas and we're going to get you drafted if you'll put in the work and you're talented enough. Super validating for even guys like Keelan Robinson, Jordan Whittington. So what can Sark sell that guy who is third on the depth chart, but he's still talented. He's behind good dudes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let me tell you a story about our number three receiver. Let me tell you a story about our number four running back.
Yeah, hang tight. Hang tight.
Yeah. I mean, pretty cool. And by the way, if you're a star, you can go in the first round. So yeah.
Hang tight. I'll get you drafted. Don't worry about it.
Let me ask you, so I was not sure about this, but now that we've hit the portal pretty well, I think we can do double digits in 2025 if things break right.
I'm doing math in my head. Sorry.
Some of it's going to be dependent on who goes pro. But I'm assuming the Jaden Blues go pro.
If all things break right, it may be more.
It's crazy, right?
If it doesn't break right, it's 8.
Yeah, which will put you in the top 10.
Yeah, it's better than 0.
Yes, it's better than 0.
But no, I think, the floor is, I think the floor is 8. 7, 8, 4?
Yeah, I mean.
Probably.
And I'm pretty sure we got 2 first rounders, guaranteed.
Yeah, at least.
I just saw Bo Nix get drafted.
No, yeah. No,
reasonably confident they'll overlook some of Quinn's mechanical deficiencies.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I think Cole Lord may get.
Cole Lord's going on the third. Yeah. There's no doubt.
But no, I'm joking, obviously, but maybe not. I think 8's a good floor. I think it is. I think it. Yeah. I'm gonna settle on 8.
Not bad. Not bad at all. So, and there's still a possibility to add.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you don't know. We got we got a couple days left?
Wednesday. Yeah, we're recording this on Monday evening. So they have through Wednesday for the portal. You have to declare your intentions, but I don't think you have to leave yet, is how it works.
I think you're understanding it correctly.
So,
but, yeah, there's some, there's
can
some
you, back- so let me ask you this. Can you declare and then basically field offers and then just return to Texas if you feel like it?
So my understanding is the compliance department has 48 hours to put you in.
Okay.
Once you tell them that. I don't know how the back end looks.
But you can return if you want.
You can.
Okay.
I think Sark has made it pretty clear that you
don't
can't
do that.
Return. You can't return. But it letter of the law, yes, I think you can.
Well, I think Sark, I respect him. I think he's a great dude. But I think he also has enough Jimmy Johnson in him that, you know, there's the famous Cowboys story of a guy was sleeping during a film session. So he threw on the lights and cursed him out and cut him. And they said, well, what would you have done if that had been Emmett Smith? He would have said, I would have walked over and said, Emmett, wake up.
I agree.
So if Kelvin Banks declares for the portal for some reason, Sark will be like, hey, Kelvin, we understand. Come back. We'll be waiting for you, buddy. It's not going to happen. But
in a line of my former head coach, the world treats winners different than losers.
That is very true. And Augie had some wisdom.
And it also treats good people and good players a lot different than it treats bad ones.
Sure. Very true. So tell me what players on the current roster you'd like to see transfer out.
Out?
I'm just kidding. They do this to me every time I do it inside.
I think they're in good shape, really. Like, honestly, I think
they are.
I think the guys that have left are not bad players. We're in a good spot now to where the guys that have left are not bad players. They're just seeking greener pastures, which they may find them or they may not. They may have been better off waiting 2 years. Who knows? We'll see. But I don't think we're in a position to where we're having to make room. It's basically like, hey, here's where you sit. You're probably 2 years away. Do you want to wait 2 years? We're willing to wait 2 years for you because we think you have talent. But if not, we'll use your spot.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Austin Jordan was in that camp.
Agree.
And I think Austin Jordan's like, hey, man, I just want to go and like start and play football.
I just want to go play. Yeah.
I don't begrudge that.
No, absolutely not. No. Would I have rather seen him play in 2 years here? Yes. But I don't have a problem with him going to Tulsa. And
if he goes to SMU and starts and balls out, he's second team all ACC. Man, more power to him. Awesome.
He'll beat Arizona State.
You think so?
No, I think Carrington is basically establishing a minor leagues over there.
Is he really?
That's kind of what it seems like.
Yeah. Interesting. Isn't Arizona State going to have some pretty serious penalties coming down?
I mean, only if you think that, you know, the NCAA has any teeth.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for the program that goes, no. And the NCAA is like, no. You're down to 75 scholarships and you can't do this and you have this. And the program's just like, no, we're good.
I think that's the program that's going to push it. I really do. I think they're going to.
I think the program's going to go, yeah, we investigated and we self-punished. All of our coaches have to go through a rules course.
Yeah. It's like Michigan
and,
did.
We told them how disappointed we are. But the guys who committed these infractions are gone. So there's no use in punishing us. So we're good.
No, that's essentially what Michigan did.
Michigan went beyond that. Michigan was like.
Arizona State's probably going to be the first one to be like, hey, look. No, I don't care.
But is their interim coach going to cry?
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You can tell us we can't join the Big 12?
We're already punished.
Like, we're sitting out here. We're in Tempe. We're not even in the cool city of Arizona.
Like, we had the best year the Pac-12 has ever seen. Now we're in the Big 12. This sucks.
We're selling people on getting to go to LA. Now we can't. We can't even go to Austin. Now we got to go to Waco.
We're going to Waco and Lubbock.
We got to go to Waco and Lubbock to recruit anybody from Texas and Houston. Yay.
We're going to have to fly into Austin and bus up to Waco. Oh, that's great. Hey, can we give a shout out to David Pierce for playing 4D chess by taking a bus up to Norman?
Hey, it worked.
Thus meaning that the eighth inning game because of weather had to be called and Texas escapes with the 12-10 win.
Bus driver had to get home, man.
I did not watch that game, but I'm assuming with the 12-10 score through eight, it was a battle of great pitching.
We hit 6 two-run homers.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. At least five. God. I don't know how we scored the last two runs, but yeah. At one point, we had scored 8 runs, and in the 5 innings of the game, we had hit 4 two-run homers.
Oh, my God.
Skip looked like he was about to kill himself in the dugout, which I hate, but love Skip, but he still wears crimson. And the rest of the pitching staff, it wasn't good, I guess would be a way to say it in a positive manner.
Hey, was it right before your time or right after the time that LSU discovered steroids and Gorilla Ball?
It was before me.
Do you remember all that? Did you watch baseball then?
No. So there was a guy named Brad Cressy, and I have no idea where he's at or know anything. But I remember him, and nobody's going to be able to see this. But so if this was the baseball bat, he would have he had one finger on the knob with his bottom hand, and it was just like a whip. And he just swung. I mean, you've never seen somebody swing hard in your life until you've seen this guy swing hard.
Okay.
And he had like 30 home runs that year. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, but that was like Skip Bertman, Gorilla Ball to a T. So, yes, no, that was before me. But yes, I did see it. And it was.
Did he weigh 230 and kind of have a really red, puffy face?
Probably weighed 230. Don't remember what his face looked like.
Lots of back acne.
Very tight uniform. Let's say that.
Okay. Got it.
Can we say that?
Yeah. I'm reading the subtext.
We'll say his uniform was tight.
So for those of you who did not follow college baseball, and I was certainly not following it at that level, but I remember I was watching some ESPN highlights, and it was a LSU South Carolina game or something, and the score was 22-18.
Yep.
And I just like immediately my head whipped to the dudes on the LSU team because every single guy was a monster. And they were going up there, and they were taking swings where when they missed, they would spin around like stuff you don't see in baseball games, basically. And I was just like, wow, we are in a different era right now. That was unbelievable.
There was a guy that got fooled by a changeup, and he actually hit a home run on the backswing.
Are you joking?
No, I'm just kidding.
But... Oh, okay. God. Holy cow. That's a lot of Decadorablin. That's impressive.
But that era was a very interesting. And even in, what was it, 2003 when Texas won the national title, wasn't it like 13-8? They beat South Carolina in the final. I think it was like 13-8, 13-5, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember.
It was a high score. It wasn't 2-1. I'll promise you that.
No. It wasn't Augie's dream.
Yeah. So
baseball 3-2, moved a runner late and won the game. Yeah, I just did. That was an amazing era. It came about 10 years on the heels of Major League Baseball's Gorilla Ball
phase. Yeah, a little behind.
But it is good that college guys discovered, hey, if I take these Mexican supplements, I can hit the ball real hard. It's good stuff, man. I love it. You know what that tells me? Those guys were winners. They wanted to win.
They weren't coming from south of the border. They were coming from over an ocean.
Oh, yeah? Which, Atlantic or Pacific?
Pacific's way too far, probably.
Okay. It's coming down the Mississippi River on a skiff.
There's other drugs that come from the South, but they don't. The ones that help baseball don't come from across the Rio Grande. Or maybe they do now. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, in Brazil, you could just walk in a pharmacy and get steroids.
Same in Venezuela.
Okay. So if you've ever watched MMA or the early years of Pride before in the UFC, Brazilian fighters had a certain look that was telltale.
Well, different than everybody else.
A little different, but yeah, the Americans caught up. We're not completely stupid. Mark Coleman, he got in his shots.
Figured it out.
Yeah, he figured it out.
But, I just thought it was cool. I could get a tube of Voltaren down there.
What's Voltaren?
Anti-inflammatory cream.
Oh, okay. You need a doctor's prescription to get that here?
You did. I don't know if you do anymore, but.
But you could
go ahead.
A pitcher can always get Vaseline over the counter. So.
Yeah, the Vaseline doesn't help your elbow feel better. Voltaren does.
It does? Okay.
For a couple hours at least.
That's what. Yeah, you came a little too late for Regenikine and all that stuff, right?
No, yeah, it was all before me. Heard stories about it, though.
Yeah. Well, that was when, do you remember when NFL players would go to Germany, quote unquote?
Absolutely. Yep.
And now they go to a clinic in Santa Monica, but there was a period where like Peyton Manning was going to Germany. And then did you know his wife ordered steroids for herself?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why her forehead got bigger too?
Hey, look, we're on Team Manning, so I don't want to.
Hey, I'm on Team Manning too.
We're not going to denigrate.
Maybe she went with Clemens' wife.
That's true. Yeah.
Love you, Roger. Sorry.
I do. Hey, man, I don't care. It's like.
I don't either.
I always laugh.
I live in Yoakum. Nobody's going to come knock on my door.
I always used to laugh when people be like, oh, Ben Johnson cheated and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, everyone he raced in that race was on something, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You're mad at Ben Johnson for cheating harder and lifting more weights and getting stronger.
He cheated better.
He cheated better. He did the Lance Armstrong and now everyone's pissed off. So he cheated in a professional and organized manner rather than a haphazard manner that you did. So
he wrote checks for his stuff.
That's right.
He didn't pay cash.
So have you ever seen the documentary Bigger, Stronger, Faster? It's great. It's awesome.
It's really good. It really, no bullshit. Like, it really is good. It's a very, I would say, pretty accurate depiction.
And then Icarus is a great companion documentary to that, which details the Russian cheating, which was very impressive.
Well, a little different level.
Holes in the wall, false, you know, duplicate bottles, like crazy stuff. But yeah, I mean, when I lived in Silicon Valley, Randy, no joke, just sort of bored tech people because biking is big there. They were like this Icarus guy, and they would get on roids, HGH, all sorts of different stuff, testosterone, and they do it under a doctor's care, and they'd go in and go compete in amateur races with no reward and go win, you know, or do whatever. And there's like a whole subculture there of that. It's pretty wild. Just bored tech billionaires. Good stuff.
Sounds about right.
As Kenny Powers said, I'm not trying to be the best at exercising. I'm a real athlete. Actually, I'm not a real athlete. You're a real athlete, but
yeah. Not anymore, I'm not.
I mean, as much as a baseball player can be an athlete. That's what I meant.
I cook stuff really good.
Like what? What have you cooked recently?
Yeah, everything. I did some bacon wrapped fillets over the weekend, Paul.
Oh.
Did some fajitas.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Did some ribs a couple weeks ago.
Do you overcook your fajitas? Are they dry?
Dependent upon who you talk to, yes.
Are they stringy when you bite into them?
No. Because that has to do with how you cut them.
Well, that's part of it. That's like the, what is that sinew? What is that?
I'm sorry?
What is that? That's the stringy, chewy part of the fajita. Like, is it sinew or something?
That's the part that should be trimmed off before you cook them.
Yes. What is that of the animal?
Sinew would be the correct term, yes. Okay. But yes, that should not be on the...
You just like to be saying the word sinew over and over. You like that in your...
I was just going to listen to you say it over and over.
Sinew.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Do you ever... How do you cook your steaks?
Fire.
No. Medium rare.
Medium rare.
Okay. That's what I do.
Yeah, medium rare. The trick with the bacon wrapped is you have to go indirect heat. to make sure the bacon is done, and then go bam, bam, and do the fillet. But our family's go-to has always been barbecue chicken, and my mom has a very good sop recipe that will go down in the Hall of Fame. So that's my go-to. If I have to cook anything for any family event or whatever, I'm throwing chicken halves on the old barbecue pit, and it's pretty hard to screw them up, but I feel like
hard to screw up.
Feel like we have it down.
A little more economical.
Definitely more economical. I walked out of HEB the other day and I was like, wait, this is what chicken costs? This is way better than we normally bake.
Yes. So to what degree do you judge someone when they say, hey, Randy, I want mine well done?
For a steak?
Yes.
Oh, I still, my kids still are like, can I have some ketchup? And I just want to like shove them off the chair.
So I'm such
if you are over nine,
you can't.
And you ask for ketchup, then I'm sorry, you have to go eat something else.
Yeah, so I'm such a dick. We went to a barbecue place, which is the only like reasonable barbecue place in Colorado Springs in terms of it is actual barbecue. It would be the lowest rung of Texas barbecue.
Is it actual barbecue?
It is actual barbecue.
Okay.
And my son got brisket sandwich. So proud of that order. That's ordering like a man.
Sliced or chopped?
Chopped.
Okay.
He's a kid. It's all good. So
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
All right. Okay. So we sit down and he reaches for the ketchup. Now he's got fries on his plate. So I'm not reacting yet. And he lifts open the bun and he begins to turn the ketchup and I catch his hand. And I say, son, you're putting ketchup on that. You can put it on your fries, but don't put that on the barbecue. Just, you know, get barbecue sauce or just eat it as it's provided, because they've already, the juice and the flavor, that's what you want. And he said, well, I want it with ketchup. And so I took the plate from him and said, you cannot eat this unless you agree
get something else
to not use ketchup. And then he folded his arms and said, fine, I just won't eat. Yeah. And I said, that's perfectly fine with me. I'm going to take this to go and I'll eat this later, or I'll eat this tomorrow morning. It'll be awesome. And then he broke because he's a child and I'm an adult. And then he did not use ketchup the rest of the night. And then when I went to the bathroom, I took the ketchup from our table and I gave it to another table and said, do not give my son this ketchup. He's trying to use it on the barbecue. And the guy goes, where are you from? And I said, Texas. And he goes, I'm from Laredo. I hear you. And then he gave me like a high five and he's like, you're a good dad.
Nice. Nice.
So you're the only person that would say nice to this story, because any woman that hears this story thinks I'm, you know, daddy dearest and that I beat him with a wire.
That's absolutely. That's how you do it. That's
but they're like, well, you bullied him. And I was like, yeah. Yeah.
Technically, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. He'd learn proper behavior. Good.
Yeah. No, a little part of me dies every time I make steak. And when I say steak, when I tell the kids they're eating steak, it's really not steak, but it's meat.
Yeah.
Came off the grill. They're like, can I have some ketchup? I'm like, oh, God, here we go. But no, if it was a real steak.
Hey, by the way, A1 sauce is equally about an offense.
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah. That
it's not just ketchup.
Falls in the same category.
Now, I will say, probably the most upset I've ever been was I was at a backyard barbecue of an ex-girlfriend. And I'm manning the grill and being the social bon vivant and, what do you want? And, you know, talking trash. And when there's little kids coming up in the family, I'm giving them the business and, you know, whatever. I'll give you a portobello mushroom. You can't have meat, stuff like that, right? Being Mr. Entertaining. And as I'm manning the grill and making sure everything's good, her dad comes by. Nice guy. And I turn around and I'm getting the little barbecue whisk so I can whisk on some sauce. And I look back and he's got the spatula
and he's pressing as hard as he can on every hamburger that's on the third level of the barbecue. All the juice is flying out of them and going in.
I just walk out at that point. If you want to cook, I'm good.
I honestly thought he was screwing with me and was like, haha, we'll throw these out, or we're going to give these to my dog or whatever. But he was like, you know, you got to stay on the grill, man. You got to make sure this is. And I was just like, oh man, what is going on? Like, my head kind of reeled. Like, I thought I was going to faint. I got upset. And he could read it on me. I was trying to pass it off. I'm like, okay, give me back that spatula.
go away.
I was like, okay, well, looks like they need you over there.
I mean, coming from a guy from Colorado, that's impressive.
You know what? I was born and raised in Texas. Texan.
And you grew up in Austin. That's even crazier.
You know what? The Austin I grew up in was different.
You're correct.
Even the Austin
I went to is much different. You're correct.
Yes. But yeah, the Austin I grew up in certainly was deserving of its reputation, but also it was different. Yes.
Yeah.
Like the Austin I grew up in, it was not weird to see a guy walking around in his Wranglers and his boots.
Hey, you can still find that.
You can
find it if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually gay clubs.
Hadn't been in one of those in a minute. Sorry.
Oh, Randy. When you were younger, good looking athlete, you'd go drink for free some nights. Like, these guys are so friendly. I go in there and they just buy me drinks. They're the best. All right.
Never had so many people escort me to the door.
That's right. I've never had so many guys follow me into a bathroom before. Hey, do you need anything? Hey, you good? All right. Anything we need to add before we go completely off the rails?
I think we've already gone completely
off. I think we've done enough. We did a bunch of judgy meat talk.
Yeah.
You hit my one real weakness, the one chink in my armor.
I'll say one thing. Hey, Texas baseball, let's keep it going.
Yeah.
It'll final hot streak here towards the end. Maybe get yourself a little better seed in the tournament. I don't think
so. At this point,
at
this point, they're going to go to a regional. They're not hosting one, obviously.
Oh, absolutely not. No, where they currently sit,
are they like a three seed?
Three seed, and a lot of people are sending them east to College Station. I don't think that's a place where we want to be.
Probably not. A&M appears to be good.
Pretty solid team over there. So I would say let's try to make your way up into a little better three seed, or maybe even sneak into that two conversation if you can get a little hot streak. But man, there's just so many questions. I don't know. I don't know what to make of the team, but I think the team plays hard, which is, I mean, yeah, but the team is what the team is. Not like they can go grab four people tomorrow. So there's some good players on it. They play hard. So hey, see what happens.
All right, before we head out, anything you're looking for in the portal, in or out, for the football team?
Probably like to see some defensive line movement. Other than that, not really. I think we're in good shape, really.
I think they may be looking at a DB, but I'm not sure if the dude's good enough.
I don't hate the idea. I just don't know if that person that would be in upgrades out there.
Yeah. Or available. So there's some crazy talk going around that Miami's been crazy in the portal.
Yep.
And they've been, let's say, active in their tampering and contacting people. And so apparently they've contacted the Michigan DTs and made an offer. And so we're going to find out if it's an offer they can't refuse. But
they got some boats on the water.
The amazing thing about the Miami program is they don't have a lot of depth in their support, and it's not very wide. but they always manage to find a guy who's got a RICO case pending against him, who's doing real estate schemes or selling cocaine or doing whatever, timeshare salesman. And this guy wants to get involved in the Miami Hurricanes program. And they are able to find these guys about every 3 or 4 years, and they milk them dry before their federal prison stint. And then they go find the next one. I'm envious.
Hey. Have you
considered looking into our Venezuelan connections and seeing if we can get a state sponsor now with oil prices around 90?
I had not thought of it, but okay. I would not be opposed to flying down there and trying to work a deal if it would be beneficial for us.
See, that's why you're a winner, Randy.
Mainly if it was to Margarita Island, but I'd go back to Maracaibo.
That's why you're a winner, Randy. And that's why the world treats you differently than everyone else. For Randy Boone, I am Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em horns.
Hook 'em, everybody.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours. And that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning. And right now, he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.